Mr. Watson, reel 3.
Then after their PT, they would go and have a shower and prepare for ordinary periods during the morning. There was an early morning period starting at 7:45. Breakfast at 8:30. Periods again from 9:30 up till 1. Rest after lunch. Three times a week they'd have games in the afternoon. And the other times they would be having periods. Oh, I forget the times, 2:15 to 3:45, I think it was, and then games again on the other days from 4:30 onwards. Prep in the evening, 6:15 till 8:00. Supper, and off to bed at 9:30. Lights out 9:30. That was a sort of normal day.
About what proportion of the time would be devoted to military instruction of any kind?
Relatively small. They would have arms drill, probably about an hour's arms drill, twice a week, perhaps three times a week. I'm a bit vague on that. And apart from that, there was very little. We had a shooting range, of course, and they used that. But otherwise, there were just the ordinary parades, which I mentioned earlier.
If such a relatively small proportion of the time was devoted to military instruction, why do you think that a special college was necessary?
Well, the idea was to give them a foundation of life together in a college, rather like the English public school, knowing quite well that after they passed out they would be inundated with army training once they got to the academy. And I think it was a sort of bringing together of the various religions and castes and sects, getting them all under one roof, getting them to understand each other's views, and make the most of that. I think that was the main object.
Were there any other methods of spending their leisure time apart from physical methods, sport and PT? What else did they do?
Well, there were clubs, of course. I mean, we had a stamp club, photographic club, debating society, various activities like that. I'm afraid I forget the others, but there were plenty of them, and they would take place usually in the evenings.
Did the students show any interest in political matters?
No. I don't think there was ever any evidence of politics at all, to my recollection. They didn't seem to be politically minded. They were relatively young. I mean, after all, they left when they were 18, 19. And their life was really filled with the idea of getting into the armed forces. And because of that, I don't think that they were terribly interested in the political background of the country.
Were there any special sex problems because it was an all-male school?
Ooh, I don't think so, no. We used to have the occasional rumours that there was trouble, but it never really came to anything. No, there was no...
Rumours of homosexuality?
Yes, that, and going out sleeping with somebody, but it was never proved or anything like that. And no, I think that was rather in the background.
Were the cadets confined all the time to the academy during term time?
They were, yes. They were not allowed out of the compound unless they had a pass or unless their parents came to see them. Again, very much like an English public school. their day was, their complete day was catered for.
Was it common for parents to pay visits to the college?
Not very often, no, not very often. And remember that India's a very large country, and they came from all ends of India, from Nepal in the north, Kashmir. In fact, we've had them from Chitral, away right up beyond the Khyber Pass, right down to the south of India.
Did any of the boys stay on during the holidays because of this?
No. No, they were all sent home. They all had free passes. They were all given the army paid for their train fares home, so that there was no snag over that at all.
How many terms did you have in a year?
There were only two terms a year. The first one was January the 5th, I think it was, till May the 10th, and then August the 1st until December the 10th, I think it was. Mind, there were breaks. India's a country, as you know, of several religions, and every religion has its own holidays, and every holiday was celebrated by every religion. In other words, Dasara or Diwali, which are entirely Hindu holidays, were also celebrated by the Muslims. So on the other hand, the Muslim holidays would be celebrated by the Hindus and the Sikhs, so that they got the best of both worlds in that way. We usually used to organize things, either outings or special matches or something like that on those holidays. And then, in addition to that, there was a break during what they called the pujas, which were sort of religious festivals, when there'd be 2 or 3 days break. But as a rule, the cadets did not go away.
Where did you go to on these outings?
We'd go to Delhi. We'd go to we had one or two to Delhi, because there were various places that we wanted to see in Delhi. Nainital. No, we didn't go to Nainital. Where else did we go? I think out into the jungle, 15, 20 miles out, take them out for an outing there, if they wanted to come.
What type of things did they go to see in the cities? Architectural sites?
Yes, there's a very famous observatory in Delhi. That was the one particular one that I remember, where we went to see this observatory. Other places were too far. That's the trouble. You're very limited. Because of the vastness of the whole country, you're very limited if you're in one particular place. It means more than a day's journey. And that wasn't always possible.
Did you pay visits to places of work or anything of that kind?
No. There was nothing anywhere near us that we could have done anything like that, unfortunately. I'm not sure whether they haven't done any recently. I wouldn't know. It's possible they may have taken parties to factories since I left. But it would mean more than one day out.
What about questions of paying visits to cantonments to see the work of soldiers? Was that something which they did?
No, there was nothing like that. I don't think they'd have gained anything in that way at all. And remember too that the various regiments in cantonments, they weren't always there. There'd possibly be only a sketchy number there. They might have been out on manoeuvres somewhere, because although, for instance, the 2nd Gurkhas were stationed on the other side of cantonments, and the 9th Gurkhas out at Birpur, a couple of miles away, all part of cantonments, it didn't mean that they were always there. There'd be a skeleton staff there, perhaps, but only at certain times of the year would you find the complete battalion, the complete regiment there, or the complete battalion.
Coming back to the term times, why were the terms arranged for those particular times of the year?
I think the main thing was the hot weather. That was the controlling factor. You see, when you get to May, in fact, in April, towards the end of April, it gets very hot. Dehradun is about just over 2,000 feet above sea level, and it wasn't so anything like so hot as in the plains, but at the same time it was very much inland. And in June, before the monsoon broke, it used to go up to round about 100. Seldom over, but certainly it would stay in that region for quite a while. And it was really too hot to work. So it was decided, the Defense Department decided that when the college was opened, the best thing to do would be to break then until the monsoons had got well underway, and the monsoons usually came towards the end of July in Dehradun, early if you were lucky. And by that time it cooled down a lot, and so they decided that there would be a break from May, middle of May, to the beginning of August, 2.5 months. Then at Christmas, of course, it got very cold. I mean, we did have extremes, although only once have I known Dehradun to have snow. But they had to have a break then, and there was about 1 month from the middle of December to 10th of January, whatever the date was.
Did the students have holiday work to do?
As a rule, no.
When was the examination period?
Do you mean the main examination for passing from one form to another, do you mean, or to pass to the academy?
Can you tell us what type of exams you had?
Oh, well, I mean, we took the Cambridge examinations, the ordinary Oxford and Cambridge examinations. No, we took the Cambridge examinations. That's to say, direct from England in those days. To go to the academy, of course, as I say, but when they went to Sandhurst and Woolwich, they took the civil service examination. Then India introduced its own when the academy started in 1932. And so there again, there would be examinations for the academy twice a year, because the intake there was twice a year, just the same.
And what time of the year would those exams be?
Well, it would be towards the end of the particular term, prior to the term in which they would go.
And were the Oxford and Cambridge examinations exactly the same as the English one?
Oh yes, we used to have the papers sent out. Of course, after a time, well, I say after a time, nowadays they don't do that, they have their own. Until quite recently, I think they were still doing the Cambridge examinations.
So did that mean that the subjects taught, the content of the subjects taught, was exactly the same as in England?
Yes. Yes.
So did they learn?
I mean, they were bound by the regulations in the syllabus of the Cambridge examinations.
So would they learn the geography of England and the history of England rather than of India?
Yes, I think they did, and I think that's rather a mistake. As far as I remember, they did. But my memory is a little bit hazy because I was on the other side of the fence there, being on the science side, and I just can't remember clearly whether it was. They must have done Indian history, they must have done.
But all in all, they were getting a very anglicised education.
They were, yes.
What type of a life could the wives of the teachers lead in such a college on a cantonment?
Yes. Well, I think it's not only in the college or in cantons. I think it was universal throughout India. The British Mem Sahib, as she was known, in a way, led rather a lonely life. She hadn't a great deal to do because she always had plenty of servants to do it for her. And in fact, the servants would do all the buying in the bazaars, and there was very little left. He would, the bearer would cope with the servant problem completely. He would manage the running of the household, and so that the only thing that was left for the Mem Sahib was in the form of picnics and social life and dinner parties and going down to the club.
Did the wives play any part at all in the life of the college?
Not directly, no. None at all. We would have cadets in for tea, for instance. And the wives would attend any function that was going on. And they would always be invited to anything that the college was laying on, even to visiting the temples. But apart from that, as I say, it was just a social life for the Mem Sahib.
Did you have children whilst you were out there?
Oh yes, rather.
And what did you do about their education?
Well, it was a little bit difficult during the war. Prior to the war, of course, the tendency was to send the children to school in England.
To prep school?
Yes. And to public school. There were one or two schools in India which were quite good. In fact, very good. And during the war, I think the reverse happened. Children were no longer sent home. In fact, we actually, at the college, opened an English section. It was for boys, the sons of parents who were serving in India, in the army, who were actually at school, at some school, various schools in England, and they decided that life in England was rather unhealthy and they would rather have the children out here. And they brought them out, and as I say, we opened this English section. And that lasted for, I think it started in 42, 43, I'm not quite sure, and lasted until the end of the war, when, of course, the whole idea had to be abandoned and the section was disbanded. They fitted in extremely well, as of course one would expect. There was as much competition between the British section and the Indian sections as there was between the Indian sections originally in things like games and athletics and so on.
When you say an English section, you mean an English house?
An English house, yeah. Yes.
But apart from the fact that they were, so all the English boys were in the one house?
They right? were in the one house, yes.
But otherwise, did they mix
oh,
with
yes.
the rest of them?
Oh, yes. They fed with them. They played games with them. Everything otherwise was absolutely normal.
Were they in the same dormitories together?
Yeah. No, they had their own dormitory.
Coming on to your own children, did you feel that their health was looked after adequately whilst you were there?
I do, yes. There were British doctors out there. There was a big medical, army medical set up in Dehradun in any case. And we didn't have any trouble in that way. As I say, my son did catch tummy trouble very badly on one occasion, but he was well treated and he got over it. They both had measles, and just like ordinary children everywhere, Apart from that, no, there was no trouble.
As far as the English boys are concerned during the war, when they had their own section were concerned, did you find much difference between the English boy and the Indian boy in any way, in spheres like, say, behaviour or anything of that kind?
Certainly not from the point of view of behaviour, but I should say probably the Indian boy was more intelligent. At least, perhaps that's a little bit hard. Shall we say he applied himself more vigorously to academic study than the Britisher. But then the Indian always was very hard-working if he set his mind to it. On the other hand, the Indian boy, I always found, tended to learn things by heart and by rote, and he couldn't always apply his knowledge. And I found that in England the same too.
Did you have personal Indian servants yourself?
Do you mean as a household?
Yes, as a
oh,
household.
Oh, yes, certainly. Oh, yes.
What servants did you employ?
Well, we had a cook, a bearer, a khidmatgar, he's a man who waits at table. A mali, that's a gardener, and a sweeper. And an ayah to look after the children. That was our little lot.
How did you recruit them?
I got my first bearer through the one of the Britishers out there, the wife of the head, as a matter of fact, wife of the principal. She interviewed the servants for me because I didn't know any Hindi at all, and she picked what she thought was a good bearer, and he lasted quite a while, and he was very good. From there onwards, what happened was that the various servants who usually knew my bearer would come along with their recommendations, their chits, and then it was left for me to choose.
What type of things did it say on the chits?
Oh dear, I can't remember. They were, as a rule, they were non-committal. I mean, you know the old, do you want that old story of the cook who had the chit which said, as what was it? As cooks go, he's a good cook as cooks go, and as like all good cooks he went. That was the type of thing which told one a great deal under the surface.
Yes.
But apart from that, I mean, there might have been anything. They would say he was good at, if he was a cook, for instance, he was good at pastries or good at general meat cooking or something like that. And from the bearer point of view, it would say that he looks after your clothes well. The usual, straightforward things. Usually rather uninteresting.
Did you find these servants satisfactory?
They varied a lot. I must have had about 5 bearers during my time out there. The last one I had for a very long time. He lasted well. He was very good. One before that, earlier than that, was a Pathan. He had to go. He said he wanted to go on leave, and he said he'd come back. He had to go up to the northwest frontier, and he said he'd be back in about a month, but I'm afraid he stayed away. He never came back. Another one was good, and he came down to Bombay when I was on leave because I was going to drive a car up, and he came down to Bombay to meet me. He stayed 2 or 3 years, and he was quite good. I can't remember why he left. He was a Mohammedan. So they varied enormously. It rather depended on A, how you looked after them, and B, if you were strict enough with them. provided you were not casual, because if you were, they always took advantage of you. But on the other hand, provided you looked after them reasonably well, helped them with their clothing and so on, they were quite reasonably good.
You mean casual about keeping them up to the mark?
Yes.
Did you find that they were trustworthy?
Yes. On the whole, yes. Food, of course, would disappear, but and invariably their charges were more than what one would have paid if one had gone oneself to the bazaar. But apart from that, yes, they were reliable.
How did you pay them? Did you pay them individually or through the bearer?
Yes, no, individually. Once a month. They were invariably always in debt, and they were always coming along asking for an advance, and by the time the month ended, they were about 2 months ahead very often. Particularly the sweeper. He seemed to be the worst. He seemed to be the most difficult to manage his money concerns, but I think that was largely... I had him years, practically the whole of the time I was out there, and my Marley. In fact, I think I had them the whole time. And he had a very large family, the sweeper had, and I think it was difficult for him. It was understandable.
They lived outside the cantonment, did they?
No. Each bungalow had its own quarters, which were separate for the servants. They were about 50 yards away, or rather less.
Did you ever meet the families?
One would see them, not meet them in the sense that one would go into their quarters more than necessary. I mean, there were times when if they were making a lot of row, one would go in and tell them to shut up. And one would see them about in the compound, yes. But apart from that, no.